Tonight, Decision 2014, the first televised live debate with the Democratic candidates and the race for governor in Maryland. Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, Maryland State Delegate Heather Mizier, and Attorney General Doug Gansler. Live from the Clary Smith Performing Arts Center at the University of Maryland College Park, here's David Gregory, moderator of NBC's Meet the Press.
And good evening, I'm David Gregory. Welcome to the Maryland gubernatorial debate among the Democratic candidates, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown, Delegate Heather Mizier, and Attorney General Doug Gansler, hosted by the University of Maryland, NBC4, and Bowie State University. This debate is also airing on WHAG in Hagerstown, Maryland, Maryland Public Television, and streaming live on NBCWashington.com. I want to begin by quickly going over the rules of tonight's debate, their rules, the candidates' debate. The debate will last 1 hour. We'll begin with one-minute-long opening statements from each candidate. The order has already been determined during a random drawing. Then our panelists and I will pose questions directly to the candidates. These are questions determined by NBC News and NBC4. The panelists have not reviewed the questions, nor has the University of Maryland. I am also in the role of timekeeper here. I've got so many accoutrements to help me measure the time, so I'll be keeping everybody to time. Each candidate is going to have 1 minute to respond. As moderator, I'll also be allowed to follow up with questions or provide a 30-second rebuttal to the candidates as necessary. Finally, the debate will conclude with closing statements. A timekeeper will be located in the front row of the audience facing the candidates. The timekeeper will notify candidates of their remaining time and when time has expired. In the interest of trying to cover as much ground as possible, we've asked the candidates to adhere to these time limits. Politicians always keep to time. Come on. And we also ask that the audience listen quietly. No applause, please, over the course of this. No shouting during the debate. Now I want to welcome our panelists tonight. Chris Lawrence is a News 4 anchor. He's spent the last decade covering some of the biggest national stories for CNN before joining the NBC family. Chris is an alumnus of the University of Maryland here at College Park, so a welcome home for him. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
Jenna Johnson writes about Maryland politics, including the General Assembly and the 2014 election for the Washington Post. She has been with the Post since 2007. Finally, Chris Gordon, a lawyer. He has been a reporter in this area for almost 3 decades, and for more than 15 years, he's covered Maryland politics and legal issues across the state for NBC4. And now, please welcome the Democratic candidates for governor, the Attorney General of Maryland, Doug Gansler, Maryland State Delegate Heather Mizier, and Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. Attorney General Gansler, you will be first with your one minute, opening statement. So the floor is yours.
Thank you, David. Thank you, University of Maryland, Bowie State, and NBC for hosting this debate this evening. As your governor, I will continue to do what I've done for the past 22 years in public service. And that's when I see something that's unfair or wrong, I will fight relentlessly to solve the problem and get things done. Whether it's bringing the Beltway snipers to justice, arguing in front of the Supreme Court of the United States to keep a child molester behind bars, suing Big Oil to clean up its spills, or preventing Big Tobacco from marketing cigarettes to our children. As your governor, I will give voice to the voiceless, making sure that every Marylander has access to health care, creating and strengthening the middle class by creating jobs, taking on the pollution lobby so we have clean air and a clean bay, and making sure that in every classroom we have skilled teachers for every student everywhere in Maryland. You see, I grew up in this state, and there's so much good about this state. But from jobs to health care to the environment, we can do so much more. And that's my fight.
And next up, thank you. Now, Delegate Mizier, your one-minute opening statement.
Thank you, David. When I was 9 years old, the factory where my father was a union welder went on strike for fair wages. And over the next 6 months, my family and I struggled to live on $45 a week strike pay. During that period of time, my father took me with him to the picket lines where I got to see firsthand men and women standing up for what they believe in with incredible courage. I have remembered this my entire time in Annapolis, standing up for Maryland families. I've expanded health insurance to 50,000 more children in our state, passed bipartisan legislation to give thousands of low-income women access to free family planning services, and just last month, decriminalized the possession of marijuana. But for all of our successes, there are still too many families who are falling behind in our state. As your governor, I will create jobs with a living wage, reduce that income inequality gap, invest in our schools, and drive down violence in our neighborhoods with a smart-on-crime strategy. Together, we will deliver real results for Maryland families.
All right. Thank you. Lieutenant Governor, please.
Thank you, David, and panelists, sponsors, and audience. Good evening. I'm a generation removed from poverty. My father was raised by his grandmother, my great-grandmother, in a one-bedroom home on a dirt floor in Kingston, Jamaica, poor neighborhood called Jonestown. And when my father was a little bit older than my son Jonathan is today, he wrote a letter to his mother, my grandmother, already in this country. He said, "Mom, bring me to America. I want to be a doctor. I want to heal people." She wasn't a wealthy woman, a woman without an education, but knew the importance of an education. So she saved her money, brought my father, her son, to this country. He was the first in our family to get a college education. My father spent a lifetime as a family doctor treating people and serving people, even those who couldn't pay for his services. When I grew up, I knew I wanted to be just like my father. I didn't go to medical school, but I had the privilege to serve our country in the Army, then in the House of Delegates, and for the last 8 years as your lieutenant governor. Together, we will build a better Maryland for more Marylanders, and I look forward to doing that with each and every one of you.
All right. Thank you all very much. Let's talk about the issues. I'm going to start. Health care is something that Americans are concerned about across the board, especially with the Affordable Care Act. I'm going to ask this question to three of you in the order that was designed, so I'll start with you, Attorney General Gansler. It is widely argued by you and others and believed that the rollout of the health care exchange here in Maryland was a disaster. Who ultimately is accountable for that? What is the impact of it, and how would you fix it?
Well, thank you, David. The Lieutenant Governor for a number of years has touted that he is in charge of the Affordable Care Act rollout. In fact, right now, if you look on his website, it says that Maryland has led the country in the Affordable Care Act rollout. The Washington Post, the Baltimore Sun, Senator Mikulski, and many others have called it a national disaster. I think the Lieutenant Governor is the only person that believes it's been a success. We're actually 45th in the country in terms of people enrolled. So that's relatively delusional. We've taken $200 million of taxpayer money and on a website was broken and flushed it down the toilet. And the tragedy is that real people can't get diabetes screening, health care for their children, heart disease medication. And, of course, for somebody who co-chaired President Obama's campaign here in Maryland and went to the United States Supreme Court and had Maryland as the lead plaintiff on the Affordable Care Act constitutionality, it gives the Republicans a chance to attack our president for doing something that no other president was able to do, which is make the United States, like every other industrialized country in the world,
all right,
give health care to its citizens.
You're out of time. Who's ultimately responsible? Who's accountable for this?
Well, the Lieutenant Governor. He's under his own recognition. He said, this is literally the one thing that he's been in charge of, that he's managed or he's led since he was lieutenant governor, and it's been an unmitigated disaster.
All right, the lieutenant governor will have a moment to respond in full in just a moment when we come to you, but Delegate Mazier, same question to you. Who's ultimately accountable for this? What would you do to fix it?
David, I'm not about casting blame. I'm about fixing the problem and making sure that families get access to the health care that they deserve. I have spent a lifetime making sure that people have access to affordable, quality health care. I believe that health care is a right, not a privilege. I have been a strong supporter of the Affordable Care Act from the beginning because, as a delegate, I had been working in our state for years to get many of those same provisions passed in our state. The first piece of legislation that I passed was a bill that allowed young adults to remain on their family's health plans until they're 25. That's now federal law because we showed how it worked in Maryland first. And I learned in passing bills to give 50,000 more children health insurance or getting women access to free family planning services that what matters most is that reforms are implemented effectively. Our ideas and our vision matter in this election, but our records of management matter even more. You want a governor with a successful track record of implementing health reforms, and I am that leader.
Lieutenant Governor, are you ultimately accountable for this?
David, as I've said on numerous occasions, everyone involved with establishing the health benefits exchange is responsible, and that includes me. I'm not new to health care. For the last 8 years, we have expanded health care to over 500,000 Marylanders who didn't have access before. So when we set out to implement the Affordable Care Act, just like the president with the difficulties in the federal website and the difficulties they had on the launch, so too did we in Maryland. And I sincerely regret that any Marylander was inconvenienced trying to get health care through the broken website. But nobody was more frustrated than me. And that's why I took the action that I did. I reorganized the leadership at the exchange. The executive director left. We refocused the vendors, fired those who didn't perform as promised, including IBM. And after evaluating the resources and capabilities at the exchange, we plussed up the call centers and the navigators. And the result, David, 330,000 Marylanders now with access to affordable
quality. But let me follow up on this. You heard the Attorney General say the amount of money that is going to chase after this mistake. You're about 50% behind where you'd like to be in getting people enrolled. On the national level, this was an issue in terms of getting those young, healthy people to pay attention ultimately and to sign up for something that they think is broken. How do you deal with that?
Well, let's give the benchmark first. The benchmark is our goal in Maryland was 260,000. We enrolled 330,000, 260 in Medicaid. Now, Medicaid's important. You know, for better or for worse, you like it or not, in America, Medicaid is the health insurance for the working poor. So we've expanded health insurance to Maryland's poor and working families, 260,000, but a total of 330. So today, in order to ensure that we have a seamless transition for the open enrollment in November, we're adopting proven technology in Connecticut.
Let me give 30 seconds to the Attorney General in a rebuttal to this.
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, the actual number that we know that was able to sign up through the website was through Jenna Johnson's article. The last we've heard was four people. And that is because there's been a cover-up from the special interest that doesn't want us to know what happened. So what they then did, they went into a closed room and decided they were going to chase good money after bad and spend another $60 million to get the Connecticut exchange to come down here and try and retrofit it. Even the Connecticut people say it won't work. But we certainly won't know if it'll work if we don't find out what happened in the first place to the $200 million.
We're going to keep the conversation going. With-